This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Plato. The deaths from drug overdose is staggering, and in new data just released this afternoon for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta point that out. It says, in 2015, more than 52,000 people died from a drug overdose, and of those, 33,000 involved a prescription or illicit opioid. And since 2000, more than 300,000 Americans have lost their lives to an opioid overdose. And maybe you know people who have suffered from that yourself. In the current opioid epidemic, Kentucky, West Virginia, and Ohio have been hit hard. Opioids include both heroin and prescription pain pills, and at least half of fatal opioid overdoses involve prescribed pain meds. We talked to Emily Walden from Louisville, Kentucky, who lost her son TJ to a prescription pain pill overdose.
My son was 21 years old. He was offered an OxyContin at a party around the age of 17, close to 18. And I don't know how many times he did that drug oral panna within a time period, but he became addicted very, very quickly. And Opana was all over Louisville, so that drug was very easy to obtain. When he told me that he was using Opana, I didn't know what it was. I had no idea, so I started doing some research. You know, I put him in treatment. He was clean for periods of time, and then he would use again, and then he would be clean again. He was in the National Guard, the Kentucky National Guard. He had been away to some training through the Guard, and when he got back, like a week later, he went on a camping trip with some friends, and my guess was, we'll use one more time, and he lost his life on that trip. He was not prescribed it. He said, I don't want to die from this. I want to get better. I want to live a normal life. I don't want to be like this. TJ was a very good kid. He had no idea that what he was taking was equal to heroin, and neither did I.
Emily Walden from Louisville, Kentucky. Will stemming the flow of prescription pills be the key to ending this epidemic? How are synthetic opioids complicating the situation, and what can be done? My next guests are here to discuss the growing epidemic. Andrew Kolodny is co-director of the Opioid Policy Research Collaborative at Brandeis University in Waltham, Massachusetts. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks for having me.
And Dr. Michael Kilkenny is the physician director at Cabell Huntington Health Department in Huntington, West Virginia. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you.
Michael, Huntington has been particularly hard hit. One day in August, there were 26 overdoses in just 6 hours, I understand. Is Ms. Walden's experience similar to ones that you've heard from other parents?
Well, yes, we've certainly heard that experience having to do with prescription opioids, and we've had some deaths associated with that here, but we have a little bit of a different situation here with more heroin and heroin-related compounds causing death in our community at this point.
Michael, how does the path get to the heroin point? Does it start with prescription drugs?
Our perception here is that an unintended consequence of responsible prescribing efforts that perhaps were done improperly that started in about 2011 in this region essentially drove people who were taking prescription drugs, albeit improperly, to heroin.
Andrew Kolodny, what do you think?
So we have a severe opioid addiction epidemic that's affecting two age groups. There's a younger group that's affected and an older group that's affected. The younger group is developing its opioid addiction mostly through non-medical use or recreational use of pain medicines, sometimes through a medical exposure. That younger group, when they get addicted, they have a hard time finding doctors who will maintain them on a large quantity of pills. doctors don't like giving healthy-looking 25-year-olds lots of pain medicines, unless maybe that doctor's a drug dealer. And so that younger group winds up on the black market. The pills are very expensive on the black market. If they're in a region of the country where heroin is available, they switch because it's cheaper. And what's happened over the past 20 years is heroin has become more available in more places where it wasn't previously available to meet the demand for it by this growing number of young people. What's happened since 2011 is that the heroin supply has become increasingly dangerous. The heroin supply now has another drug mixed into it, a completely synthetic opioid called fentanyl, which is far more potent. It makes the heroin much more dangerous. And since 2011, we've seen a sharp increase in overdose deaths among heroin users, not because people have suddenly switched to heroin, but because the heroin supply became much more dangerous. It's important to understand that we do have an older group of people that are also opioid addicted. These are people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. That older group, when they become addicted, that group does not have a hard time finding doctors who will maintain them on a large quantity of pills on a monthly basis. And we really haven't been seeing that older group switch to heroin. There's a notion that there was a crackdown on painkillers and that led people to switch from pills to heroin. That's not really true. We are still massively overprescribing opioids.
Michael Kilkenny, Huntington worked at tackling the prescription pain med problems by trying to shut down the pill mills, those places where meds are being dispensed improperly. But there were consequences that I understand that you didn't foresee.
Yeah, I think that what Dr. Kolodny said is received as correct, and we can't necessarily dispute it, but our perception is that our switch away from prescription opioids that we definitely were over-prescribing was not met with the response that we thought it would be, and that is people stopping using opioids instead. Well, I think we underestimated their dependence on the drug, and they did switch to heroin.
Now, I understand that
our experience, I think, is different from the New York City experience and their experience on Staten Island that's been publicized and well studied, and they've done a fantastic job with prescription opioids in New York City. The Appalachian experience, our demographic is different, and I think that we're possibly dealing with a different epidemic here.
I understand there are now HIV cases springing up from this epidemic, Dr. Kilkenny?
There are. In southern Indiana, in a small rural community, the HIV cases went from less than 10 in a year to over 200 in 1 year. And that was due to intravenous drug use. There are a great many other counties that are at risk of a similar outbreak, and we are one of those counties. The cities are doing a much better job. They have a lot longer experience in dealing with HIV and intravenous drug use, and they've done a fantastic job of controlling it. But in our environment, we're trying to prevent that.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to the phones. If you'd like to call in and talk to us, 844-724-8255. Let's go to Scott in Mount Vernon, Washington. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, hello.
Hey there. Go ahead.
Well, I guess the issue that I have, and I've worked as a drug treatment counselor, and I've worked with youth most of my life, and a lot of times there's been drug issues with that, and the problem that I'm seeing is this whole term opioid epidemic. It's really kind of putting a whole, you know, millions of people who have a terrible pain, and as the population ages, what we have is a pain epidemic, more than an opioid epidemic. We have a pain epidemic and we have a heroin epidemic. And lumping them together is really making a lot of people feel like criminals. And there's a lot of times when they do develop a dependence on opioids, painkillers, Vicodin, that sort of thing, OxyContin, they get into a drug treatment program that treats them the same way that they would treat someone that's addicted to heroin. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work.
Let me get a comment. Thanks for your call. Dr. Kolodny, what do you...
To be clear, we have an epidemic of opioid addiction, not really an epidemic of abuse. The problem isn't that there are a bunch of people out there taking dangerous drugs because it feels good and they're accidentally killing themselves. The problem is that we've had this sharp increase in the number of people with addiction. And some people have become addicted because they were taking pills recreationally, but many people have also become addicted taking pills as prescribed by a doctor. And it's this large increase in the number of people who are addicted that's leading to this crisis. We do have many people who suffer from chronic pain. Chronic pain is common, and it's becoming more common as our population ages. But opioids are lousy drugs for chronic pain. Opioids are good medicines for end-of-life care. They also play an important role when used for a couple of days after major surgery. But when they're prescribed to patients who have chronic non-cancer pain, when they're taken every day for weeks and months and years, they're more likely to harm the patient than help the patient. And we have maybe 10 to 12 million Americans who are on opioids chronically. So many Americans on opioids chronically that we see ads during the Super Bowl for medicines like an opioid-induced constipation drug to treat the side effects of being on opioids. They're being massively overprescribed.
It sounds like you're saying the same thing that happened with antibiotics prescription is happening with opioids.
Yeah, that's correct. There are a lot of parallels there. Patients will come into a doctor and want an antibiotic when they have a cold virus,
right.
And the easy thing for the doctor to do is give that patient an antibiotic rather than counsel them about the difference between an antibiotic between a virus and a bacteria. And the easy thing for many prescribers is to just keep writing the opioid prescriptions. So there are parallels there.
So they don't offer them any alternative to opioids?
Well, primary care doctors may have 10, 15 minutes to spend with a patient. And if the patient comes in and wants that prescription, it's the easiest thing to do. It's a little harder sometimes to figure out where there's a physical therapist in that patient's insurance network or to recommend alternative treatments.
Michael Kilkenny, do you agree with that prognosis?
I agree with almost everything that Dr. Kolodny just said, and certainly it is easier for the primary care physician to prescribe in that 15-minute encounter than it is to counsel and address issues. And a lot of primary care physicians don't have the tools or the skills to counsel and address opioid addiction during their visit, or substance use disorder is probably a better term to use.
Mm-hmm. We hear reports, people saying, you know, the opioids produced in places like China and Mexico, these are the real sources. We should stop the sources of them coming into the country, Dr. Kolodny. What's your take on that?
That's not really the problem. The problem is that we have an epidemic of addiction. So many people have become addicted. And so heroin and heroin with fentanyl in it and is flooding into these areas to meet the demand for it. If we want to bring the opioid addiction epidemic to an end, what we have to do is prevent new people from getting addicted. And that mostly boils down to more cautious prescribing so that we don't directly addict patients and so that we don't stock homes with a highly addictive drug. And then for the millions that are addicted, we have to see that they have access to effective addiction treatment. If, for example, you just close down pill mills like in West Virginia without seeing that the customers of those pill mills have access to addiction treatment, then they're going to turn to heroin or heroin with fentanyl in it. So we have to see that there's effective treatment out there for people.
I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about the epidemic of opioid addiction. Michael, what about programs in terms of harm reduction?
Well, when we get into the situation where the the epidemic really is heroin like it is here, then we're dealing with a population of injection drug users, and those people sustain risks from infection, either bacterial infection due to contaminated contents of the injection or due to viruses from the sharing of needles. Viruses in one person's bloodstream can spread to another person's bloodstream through the sharing of needles and syringes. So harm reduction focuses on access to clean syringes and then takes that kind of carrot of a clean syringe and introduces other harm reduction tools, education about proper injection, access to recovery coaches, and entry into treatment where it's available, and it goes on from there. We do immunizations against hepatitis B if they don't already have that, and we act as an entry point into a more comprehensive health service.
One last question. The 21st Century CARES Act that is making its way to President Obama's desk includes funds for states for treatment and prevention. How would you like to see that used?
Well, it does look like the money is earmarked to help states expand access to effective addiction treatment, particularly a treatment with a medicine called buprenorphine or Suboxone. And I think that is the right approach. We need treatment to be easier to access than pills or heroin if we're going to get anywhere in this crisis. I think this $1 billion over 2 years is a start. We're going to need a much bigger federal investment in this problem if we want to tackle it properly.
We've run out of time. I want to thank both of you, Dr. Michael Kilkenny, Physician Director at Cabell Huntington Health Department in Huntington, West Virginia, Andrew Kolodny, Director of the Opioid Policy Research Collaborative at Brandeis University in Waltham, Massachusetts. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, switching gears, we're going to get on your hiking boots, but you really don't have to leave your desk. We're going on a geological field trip, and it's got some 3D and VR. It's just terrific stuff. It's on our website. We'll talk about how you can go on this trip without getting wet or cold. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.